Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wozny Lambray, joined as always by my partner, my brother, my partner for real, like the Wayans, Nando Vila. What's going on, big dog?
Feeling good, just watching the empire crumble all around me, but feeling great myself.
Definitely digging the new specs. Very,
These are... These are my backup specs. They're not new. They're just my backup specs. My other ones are kind of loose. I need to get them tightened.
Got you.
So yeah.
Very 09 Williamsburg. Vibes.
Yeah.
I'm getting from you early. The early hipster back when it was still Puerto Ricans in South Williamsburg, y'all. On today's show, the New York Times, the New York Times had a bombshell expose. I don't know how else you would describe this about the nature of Trump's tax returns over a span of essentially 20 years. Some deep reporting went to that. Some actually like substantive, important stuff came out of that. We're going to get into that and the difficulty of Democrats, specifically Democrats like Joe freaking Biden, sort of railing against corporate tax loopholes. It's like, whoo, the Democrats, you can't make this stuff up. But first, of course, last night in the land of Jersey burners, in Cleveland, Ohio, the first of three planned, because after last night, I don't know why either one of these guys would agree to do another debate, honestly. First of three planned debates happened in Cleveland, Ohio. It was moderated by Fox's Chris Wallace, who is nobody's idea of like even like a sort of moderate McCain type of Republican. Like, this dude is firmly right wing. He moderated the debate between President Donald Trump and Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. If you thought this was going to be a disaster going into it, you were right. It was just marked by President Trump interrupting Joe Biden, spewing lies about Democratic governors loving his response to the coronavirus. He's talking about coal country. He's just all over the place, extremely erratic. At the end, of course, he talked about election fraud that he's been spewing pretty much ever since the polls went completely against him. He started this line of rhetoric of election fraud, but he has yet to produce any evidence of this, like not even an ounce or a shred of it. Even people in his own party are kind of like, yeah, we don't know what doofus is talking about. Like everything seems to be on an up and up. Even courts have shot this down and said, sir, if you want to do this, you have to produce some type of evidence. Of course, what came out of it, naturally, because the media is so corny, the biggest news out of it was that he told the Proud Boys to stand up and stand by, or whatever the hell he said to do. Proud Boys, of course, being, I guess, the right's answer to Antifa, which the idea that Antifa is an arm of the Democratic Party is hilarious to me. Just as so a line funny. Of just like rhetoric is just completely ridiculous. And Biden, of course, you know, it's Biden. He does have a stuttering issue. Sometimes he has a hard time stringing together seamless sort of sentences, two or three in a row. So that was evident, of course, last night. I don't know that you learned anything about the candidates. Biden was sort of, you know, doing the Biden thing, running away from Black Lives Matter, sort of holding his nose while talking about the Green New Deal, which that's what got him the nomination, quite frankly. So it's to be expected that he would sort of take that posture. And Trump not really offering much, right? Like, sort of just saying, I did a great job with the pandemic and everything else is just great. Again, I don't, to the extent that there are people who are undecided, polling right now suggests that independent voters are favoring Biden by a 20% margin. I don't know to the extent that people are undecided right now, Nando, but I don't know how, you know, as Donald Trump, who's like, you know, he's kind of getting his tail whooped in the polls right now. I don't know how this debate helped that at all. And that's, you know, pretty much a good thing for Joe Biden. And even if it's a net neutral coming out of the debate, that's good for the guy who has the big lead. And I mean, I don't know what to offer here, Nando. It was a shit show.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, America has become so neatly polarized, right? Like, I mean, America's always been kind of had divisions and things like that, but they didn't map neatly into kind of partisan politics the way it has in the last 20 or so years. So, you know, from now on, all elections are always just going to be base elections. It's all about turning out the base. So, like, you know, the pundits after the debate were like trying to do the pundit thing where it's like, well, who won the debate? Like, in terms of like, did more people like what Trump said or Biden said? And it's like, you can't do, there's no, it doesn't matter. I mean, people who already like Biden are going to say Biden won the debate. And people who like Trump, we're going to say Trump won the debate. And, and the polls at like the immediate kind of polls where they ask people like who won the debate basically track perfectly with the overall polls, which is like, you know, the Biden.
Yeah, won, I saw it was 48 to 41.
Yeah, which is more or less like where the national polling is. So, you know, really like all these elections now are just about whether you can turn out your base or not. And so in terms of like, you know, who won the debate, I mean, it's like one of these like kind of insane conversations that doesn't really matter. I mean, to me, the feeling that I was struck with is like, my expectations couldn't have been lower going into the debate, and they were, and what was delivered was even lower than that. And, you know, I watched the debate out of a sense of like, well, I comment on the news, so I should watch the debate. But I thought like maybe at least I would have like some kind of morbid enjoyment out of seeing this like kind of insane spectacle. And the feeling I got as I was watching, I was like, no, I don't like this. I don't like watching this. This isn't even like funny in an ironic way. I mean, there were some like just so insane moments that I was like, you know, I couldn't help but laugh. Like, I'm still laughing at Joe Biden's line about Antifa, where like Trump is like, Antifa, the left, you know, it's Antifa. Someone's going to do something about it. And Joe Biden goes, Antifa is not an organization. It's an idea. I was like, that's straight up for Vendetta. You know, like, ideas can't be defeated. You know, but, and like when Joe Biden was like attacking Trump, he's like, you let 200,000 people die from the coronavirus. And Trump's like, well, you would have left 2 million people die. You know, but, it was brutal. It was brutal to watch. I mean, it was what's to be expected. Trump is an insane right-wing reactionary kind of pure resentment politics avatar, which is why certain type of people love him so much, because he just fuels the resentment forever. And Joe Biden is just this kind of weak, mediocre, totally not up to the moment response. So that's what we got. I mean, and Joe Biden did this thing that drives me crazy, that a lot of Democrats of his generation do all the time, which is they always concede the premise to the Republicans and then try to fight on their turf. You know, like when Trump started attacking Joe Biden and saying like, you're with Bernie, you like socialized medicine, you want to do the socialized medicine, Biden concedes the premise of like that like any sort of public healthcare is by like de facto wrong. And he's like, no, I promise you my plan. Yeah, I have this thing called the public option, but like, I don't really want to talk about it. The point is you get to keep your private insurance and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you're making it seem like whatever it is that you propose is the bad thing. And you're just trying to walk back and say like, no, it's not as crazy as you guys think. It's just, we're trying to sneak it in. And instead of just being like, 30 million people don't have healthcare in this country. Thousands of people die every, you know, like pivot to the actual issue.
Yeah, just what's wrong with what you see, not like this socialism, like as if this guy is fucking Joe McCarthy and he's hauled you down to fucking Capitol Hill. You know, and the last debates that we had were during the Democratic Party's primary, and those were more debates in the sense that, you know, you got people like Bernie and I guess kind of Elizabeth Warren, like, yo, you know, we want to do this type of healthcare. This is why. And then you got the Biden's who's like, let's just keep Barry's thing and blah, 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 blah. And they're talking about an issue and kind of presenting ideas as to why they think one idea is better than the other. This was not that. This is just two dudes up there screaming at each other There's no debate about any policy. There's no like, man, what should we be doing about the stuff in the Middle East? Or, man, what are we doing about climate change? Or, man, people are out of work. How do we get people back in work? Or blah, blah, blah. Like, it's none of that. It's like, well, I have a jobs plan for this. Blah, blah. It's none of that. It's you screwed up. You're terrible. You're racist. You won't condemn white supremacy and blah, blah. And again, I understand why people would be alarmed by the concept of Trump telling some, you know, nameless, faceless private army of racist skinheads to stand by. And the concept that he's calling into question the integrity of the election. I understand that. I'm sorry for me from Trump. It just feels like bluster. Like all of his stuff is just bluster. It does remind me of him back in like April when he came out, when the pandemic was basically at its peak. And he's like, wouldn't it be nice if we could, you know, go to church on Easter Sunday? You know, and he was like, we're going to do it on Easter Sunday. It's just chat. This guy just chats. He knows, like, he knows that a lot of the stuff that he says gets his people excited. So he'll feed them some red meat, but it's just chatter, dude. It's just chat.
And like, so, when he attacked Joe Biden from the left, like, when Chris Wallace asked him about, like, racism and black people support, Trump immediately just goes, like, oh, you're going to talk to me about racism? Joe Biden wrote the crime bill in 1994, which put more black people in jail, and he used the problematic term super predators to describe. Like, what? You know, like, am I having a stroke?
Like, this that's like, not your argument to make.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about people making bad faith arguments. You know, they briefly touched on the tax stuff, which, of course, was met with fake news, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, I just, you know, it was a big event. Obviously, most presidential debates are usually important. Like, I remember, you know, Barry's first debate against Mitt Romney, where he got killed. He got creamed. Mitt Romney was like ready and kicked his ass, you know, and Barry sort of had to parry and come back and things like that. Like, this isn't that. This just is not that.
It's a different world.
A much different world, much different landscape. The candidates themselves are just like, you're talking about two people who take, as far as Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, like they take the pageantry and the sort of stately nature of that office very seriously. Yeah. Donald Trump does not.
He's not.
And he's the one that's sort of dictating the terms of engagement, like the rules of engagement. Like he's the one that's doing the interrupt them and saying crass things. So it's like, it's a farce.
Yeah, man. The feeling I've had for a while now, and this is like not a particularly novel insight, is that what America feels like to me right now is a state of exhaustion and decline that is so evident. And it reminds me a lot of the late Soviet period where like no one really believed in the system anymore. The system itself was so kind of captured by the elites in the system that they could not regenerate itself. Like they kept on putting out these guys to be like the premier, like, you know, the general secretary of the Communist Party, these like ancient fucking dudes who are like 90 years old and all died within like 6 months of becoming the president, you know? And that's what this feels like now. It just feels like our system, which like in the wake of these kind of momentous events, like historic events, right? A historic pandemic that has killed hundreds of thousands of people in the United States alone, but it's also like a global event. This economic crisis, which is beyond anyone's wildest imagination. This, you know, the coming ecological crisis, which we are seeing like half of the West Coast just up in flames. And people are rightly fired up about all of this. I mean, you're seeing like a huge social upheaval, which we've talked about, like one of the biggest social upheavals we've had in decades. And the will of the system is not able to absorb any of that. And instead gives us this, like it gives us this sad pathetic spectacle of this like playground bully just badgering this poor old man, you know, like, I mean, Biden, like his face in some of those moments where he's just like, come on, man, just shut up. You know, like in his face, he just like, he would put his head down and he would kind of shake his head. And while Trump's going like, you're not very smart, Joe. You were last in your class at Delaware State, Joe. You know, like, Bernie Sanders, I want to beat you, Joe. You're going to lose the left, Joe. He's just like bullying him. And Joe's just like, come on, man, just stop picking on me. Like, that's what we get to see. That's who we're forced to choose from, you know, to be the guy who sits in the Oval Office with the ability to literally like blow up the whole world with the push of a single button and the authority to basically murder anyone in the world whenever they want with a drone strike. Like these two doddering old fools, you know, one of whom is like this like insane frothing at the mouth reactionary and the other one who's just kind of like limping across the finish line. It's just, it was sad and bleak.
And before we go on, I just want to briefly talk about the electorate, because I think that's something else that comes out of this. I'm sure on your social media, it's the same thing. It's a bunch of people who's basically their digital heads are exploding from watching that with the idea of just like, how the fuck could you be for Donald Trump? Like, how can you be like a sentient, good faith person and be like, what can the reason be? And, you know, I'm going through my social media and I happen upon a person who, like a friend of a friend, we happen to be friends on social. This person lives in a very cosmopolitan city, is white, of course, and they're talking about Donald Trump. And, you know, the basically support for Donald Trump. And I'm just like, yo, this is so interesting because somebody like this person who I've met, they don't profile as your typical Trump supporter, right? Like some hayseed from Indiana in camo gear and chewing tobacco and whatever, who wants to, you know, but you know who I'm talking about. And I'm just like, it can't possibly be anything else but white identity, white aggrievement. Yeah. Like, there's literally nothing else. White resentment. Because they're, like, Joe Biden, you can't make the argument that Joe Biden is somehow anti-business or he's not fiscally conservative enough. Like, he's going to just open up welfare and he's going to do, like, you cannot make that argument about Joe Biden. And you couldn't make that argument about Hillary Clinton either. And so, and like Donald Trump is not some like he's not for some guy who makes six figures at his job, right? Like you make it. Some people make like 120 at their job and they think they're fucking Bill Gates, right? And we talk about this all the time. Like he's not for you either, right? So it can only be white identity and white aggrievement. And to that, I'm just like, what are we really supposed to do with that? You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, this guy do post after post on a story about Trump. And I'm like, realistically, if like Joe Biden is too left wing for you, I know what that really means.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, it's the logical endpoint of trends that have been happening for decades, which is that in order for Republicans basically to buy off voters with an unpopular economic agenda, because their economic agenda is always unpopular. I mean, poll after poll after poll, it's consistent and it makes sense. Like, no one likes tax cuts for the rich. You know, no one likes deregulation of fossil fuel companies and banks. Like, people fucking hate bankers. You know, like, everyone does it. That's like universal. But the Republicans need to offer a significant chunk of the electorate something. Mm-hmm. And what they offer them is this sense of aggrievement and resentment. Which really started around the 1970s. I'm actually reading a book about this right now by Rick Perlstein called Reaganland, his latest. And, you know, Phyllis Schlafly, who they did that show on, she was like kind of the one of the original kind of anti-feminist leaders. You know, she was like a conservative kind of leader from the 70s, basically an anti-feminist woman. And she always started every single speech she ever did, she started with, first of all, I just want to thank my husband for letting me come here. Like, you know, like she like the whole her whole thing is that like women need to be subservient to their husband and they have to ask permission and stuff. So, So I was like, I just want to thank my husband for letting me come here and letting me speak to you all. I always like to start my speeches with that because it makes the libs so mad. You know, like that's their politics. It's just you know, own the libs because we hate the libs for vague reasons. You know, some insert here for racism, anti-elitism, whatever, you know, like,
right.
But we hate the libs.
That's the unifying theme of everything.
Exactly. So like, I mean, you're seeing, I was this weekend, I was hanging out in a very Trump friendly suburb, in Ventura. And, you see these signs that are like, you know, Trump 2020, make the libs cry again, you know, instead of like make America, you know, like that's all they want. They just want to own the libs and Trump is amazing at it, which is why they love him. That's why they love their guy. Cause he just pisses off the right people.
And there you go. And moving on to actual news, coming on the heels of basically this weekend, the New York Times report basically did a very thorough reporting of, you know, the ins and outs of Donald Trump's finances.
Yep.
Where he's invested in his money, the loans he's taken out, the income that he's actually generated, like they get into the nitty gritty. And basically what comes out of it is that this guy right now is extremely highly leveraged. They're not sure how or why he was able to obtain any loan whatsoever because he's defaulted and filed for bankruptcy so many times that none of the New York banks would touch him. They wouldn't go near him with a 10-foot pole. And so they, you know, essentially what you get out of it is like, we don't know why or how Donald Trump could get $400 million in loans. It just doesn't jibe with anything that makes sense. We know what his assets are and his liabilities are. Like, we don't understand why he would get that loan. But of course, because I don't know, Nando. It's just it's funny to me. Like, what comes out of it is, I guess in 2017, Donald Trump paid $750 in taxes in total. Mm-hmm. And that was basically the buzzword and the buzz headline. Like, you know, you paid more for groceries than Donald Trump did in taxes and blah, 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 blah. And it became this sort of, I guess, indictment of Donald Trump's tax paying, right? And so, you know, I go and I read this and I'm like, yeah, that is bullshit. Like, it is whack the way sort of corporate entities get to operate when it comes to American tax law and tax codes. Like, that's whack. There's no two ways about that. But, you know, I, the more I thought about it, I was like, well, this is important and this is something that you should be able to attack Donald Trump on. But can Joe Biden, in good faith, attack Donald Trump for corporate tax dodging? Like, that doesn't, and again, we, and you know, some well-actually guy on Twitter was like, well, this is not, like, the tax laws of Delaware tax shelters is not the actual tax law that Donald Trump is exploiting here. But I'm like, that's not the point. The point is, like, the rules under which Donald Trump is allowed to file his taxes that way were absolutely written by Joe Biden himself. 100% Joe Biden is why he's a huge part of why our tax codes are written that way. So the idea that Joe Biden would come along and diss Donald Trump for not even, he, like, there's certain maneuvers that he did that can be argued, like, that's fraudulent. He can, you know, he can get penalized and maybe even jailed for it, right? Like, there's certain things that he did, but the overall idea and spirit of what Donald Trump is doing is directly in line with the shit that Joe Biden has stumped for essentially his whole fucking career. And I pointed this out on Twitter, right? And of course, because liberals are way dumber than they think, a lot of people hit me with, well, Joe Biden has disclosed his taxes. He's paid his taxes. I'm like, that's not the point. It's not a comparison of Joe Biden's, you know, personal tax return and Donald Trump's. It's like, these rules didn't magically appear. And don't tell me Joe Biden hasn't been in government since 2009. He hasn't been a senator since 2009 because these rules didn't appear yesterday. They've been headed this way for decades. And Joe Biden is literally one of the main proponents of these type of corporate tax dodges. And so I'm just like, Even the shit that Trump completely stinks on, the Dems can't touch him on it. You like, if you're Hillary Clinton, if you're Joe Biden, and we saw this last time when Hillary Clinton tried to bang him on some of the financial stuff. He's like, bro, you think we forgot about the $250,000 speaking engagements at Goldman Sachs? Nobody forgot about that. Like, you can't make this argument. You need to shut the fuck up about that. You specifically. And so for Joe Biden, and Joe Biden can't do it. Yes, Joe Biden can make the argument that Donald Trump sucks as a leader. He's dangerous. The military hates him. You know, he fucked up the pandemic response. He's mean to Mexican kids, yada, 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 so on and so forth. There are things he can, you know, he can hit Donald Trump with. But something like, this is part and parcel for establishment Dems. This is the shit that y'all love more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when this story came out, people ask me, you know, all the time, like, is this a big deal? Like, is this going to hurt them? And like, there's two ways to interpret that. One, in the absolute, it is a big deal. I mean, Donald Trump is like, deal. By any, you know, as even though like the most annoying libs in the world, like, no, he's not even a real billionaire. Real billionaires don't like him, you know? And it's like Trump lives an objectively rich guy life. Like whether like how his money operates in the bank or not, like Trump flies around in private jets, lives in penthouse apartments. And, you know, like he lives a rich guy life. He's rich by any yep. definition of the term. And the fact that he paid $750 in taxes, less than I paid, you know, like less than you paid, less than is an absolute moral catastrophe. You know what I mean? Like, but in politics, things are only a big deal to the extent that your opponents can use it against you as a political weapon.
Exactly.
Right. Things in and of itself are nothing, you know? So you're right that the Democrats are not very well positioned to him on it, first of all, because they're just as savvy as like Obama was very savvy about this. Like Obama knew how to turn something into a weapon. You know, there was no one remembers this, but Mitt Romney also had a similar kind of tax scandal when it came out. Yeah, when it came out, he paid a 14% effective tax rate, right? And Mitt Romney's like a super rich guy, and you know that's a lot of money, but like in relative terms, it's nothing, right? A 14% effective tax rate is lower than most people, right? Obama was very savvy about tying that, plus Mitt Romney's desire to let Detroit fail, plus the fact that Mitt Romney is like a private equity plutocrat.
Plus, he has this just air of waspy, arrogant prick to him already, and so it's perfect.
Yeah, and so Obama was savvy about that, you know, but the liberal like response now, the Democratic response now, is a combination of like, look, see, I told you he wasn't even that rich, which is like the worst possible thing ever. Nancy Pelosi's response to it was like, actually, I think it's a national security issue, which like, what? Shut up. You know, like, it's absolutely like, shut up. You know, just make him out to be the rich asshole that he is.
He's getting,
you know,
over.
Make him that he's like a, yeah, it's, he's a gang. He's a corrupt rich asshole. That's the message. People hate corrupt rich assholes. That's universal. No one gives a shit whether it's like a national security issue or not. Like no one actually believes that. So at the end of the day, you know, they're going to fumble this for the reasons you said. I mean, obviously Joe Biden is like, is deeply enmeshed in the system.
I mean, like you couldn't pick a guy who was more deeply enmeshed in it.
Totally. And also the other point is that like tax avoidance of the kind Trump, you know, did, you know, basically manufacturing losses in order to like pay a lower tax bill, is something that like tons of rich people do. You know, like it wasn't that long ago that the Panama Papers came out and showed that there was, you know, in offshore tax havens, $30 trillion sitting in offshore tax havens. That's money that is stolen from us.
Yep.
Right. The rich fucking don't pay taxes because they have access to, you know, lawyers and accountants and things like that that help them just lower their tax bill. Like, I mean, that's just at the end of the day, what he's just one of many, many, many people who do this. So tying him, not like, you know, the instinct that the Democrats always have with Trump is to make him seem like this aberration when they should be tying him to a system. You know, he's the product of a system. But they refuse to do that. They refuse to do any sort of systemic critique because they are themselves enmeshed in the system.
100%. And I bring this up because, again, you know, you can say what you want about certain people on the right not being able to be persuaded and yada, 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 yada. But I think the Dems do themselves a disservice in that effort when it's just so fucking obvious where it's like, yo, again, somebody like Pelosi specifically, it's like, dude, you yourself are rich as hell. And we know for a fact you don't live around no black people. You hold your nose when black people are around. Stop fronting. That's the number one sort of, I guess, like, what, that's why they feel like they want to own the libs. Like, they see these people as phony, as fake, and as disingenuous. And the bottom line is, a lot of that shit is true. I'm sorry, bro. Like, Joe Biden cannot be the person to rail against Trump for his tax stuff. Like, I remember people saying, like, to me when I mentioned this on Twitter, it's like, shh. We shouldn't be giving the GOP something to hit Joe Biden. I'm like, do you think people don't know Joe Biden's record in American government? Like, the people who he's allied himself with for the lion's share of his time in the Senate. Like, we know who these entities are. It's the financial services industries. Like, and again, like, from Delaware, like, you know how many companies register in Delaware for this same exact reason, you know? And again, like, when you go out and you try to be like, you know, on the one hand, I'm wearing kente cloth. On the other hand, I'm very friendly with Goldman Sachs. Like, it's not hard. Like, I guess, like, there's this idea that, you know, the other side is full of complete and utter idiots. And, like, how else can you describe them if they're willing to fall for a charlatan like, you know, like, excuse me, Donald Trump? But, I mean, from their point of view, we're falling for charlatans like Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, and Hillary Clinton. Like, these people they're like, those people don't give a fuck about black and brown people. Those people don't care about poor and working class people. And they're right. Exactly. And they're right. And I guess I was just sort of venting a just frustration about, like, there's certain things that are important. Like the tax haven stuff, like the tax avoidance stuff, that, you know, politicians who care about poor and working people should absolutely be addressing in something as important as a fucking presidential race, right? But when you nominate guys that just cannot effectively deliver that message, because, again, I know, like, people think that credibility doesn't matter, but it does on some stuff. Like, I'm gonna give you an example of credibility. Donald Trump's racism. His people believe it. His people feel like, no. He's invested in the hate for non-whites. He has skin in the game, 100%.
Like, you can believe Mitch McConnell when he says that.
Of course not. Of course not. Yeah, they don't believe Trump, Mitch McConnell. Real. But Trump, they're like, no. He's one of us. He has credibility in that. You know? And so when somebody else comes out and, you know, when they talk about race heroes and social justice warriors, it's like, you don't got no credibility, establishment Democrat, random X. Like, nobody believes you. You need more people. And that's why I think it's important, right? And that's why on Twitter, yes, I'm still a bitter Bernie supporter. Yes, I'm lamenting the fact that, like, yo, Joe Biden ain't the dude to attack Trump on this stuff. If anything, he's more like him than not on this subject. It's just, you know, and it's just frustrating.
You know, speaking of bitter Bernie supporters, after the debate, Bernie went on Jimmy Kimmel to talk about the debate. And even though Biden spent half of his fucking time bashing Bernie and everything that he believes in and things like public medicine and things that would be absolutely good things for and the Green New Deal, like Joe Biden completely distancing himself from the, you know, the thing that's going to save us from planetary catastrophe. You know, Bernie went on there and, like, incredibly sincerely defended Joe Biden, stressed the urge, the need to defeat Donald Trump, and also spoke, like, very eloquently about the real problems facing our country. And it was like, man, it wasn't that long ago that we were like debating whether we could get Medicare for all and get someone like Bernie in to like unwind the American empire in a way that's like reasonable and civilized and can create a decent life for all Americans. And now, you know, we just have to just watch this, this grotesque spectacle that is going to solve nothing, you know, and it's just going to stem a little bit of the bleeding that already is, but is just like sticking your finger in the dike because, you know, like what's Joe Biden going to do? Like once he gets in there, I mean, he doesn't talk about anything. You know, he in theory has some plans on his website, but he never runs on them. Like he has a public option on his website, which would be like a decent reform. He hasn't said it like once in his campaign. It's like on the website. Yeah. I don't know. Like, does that matter? If you don't campaign on it, like, what difference does it make?
And you saw he tried to run away from the court packing stuff. It's just.
Oh, my God. Yeah, of course.
It's just the campaign has decided, like, keep this guy in bubble wrap until November. Yeah. The 3rd, is that election day? I honestly don't even
know. November 3rd, yeah.
November the 3rd. Keep that man in bubble wrap, and hopefully we can ride this thing on out. And, of course, you know, get as many Wall Street people and insiders into government that we happen to like as possible. And everybody else could go suck one because nana nana boo boo. You're not as fancy and as important as us. And so, yeah, that's basically it. I know this was a pretty glum episode. There's really no good news to report here.
Well, look, we got the heat. We got the heat
tonight. We got the heat. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes. The spicy Miami heat of Nando's hometown of Miami, Florida. Shouts to all the South Floridians out there supporting the heat. You know, I picked the Lakers in six.
The only thing that's bring me joy. You got the Lakers in six?
Yeah, I picked the Lakers. I just think they're going to overwhelm them with talent. Yeah, eventually. Yeah. But the Heat are going to put a fight up, man. I don't think they're going to go out quietly. And so I'm really looking forward to this series. I think it's going to be incredible. That's our show for today, guys. Don't forget to subscribe to the Friday Mailbag. Make sure you're listening to Cinephobe with Zach Harper and Amin El Hassan. Make sure you're listening to every single episode that comes out on the Black Opinions Matter feed, which is, of course, the original show on Mondays. Crazy, Sexy, Cool, Wednesday Sermon, Growing Up the Same. Just make sure you're checking all of those out. Of course, please become a Patreon of Count the Dings, man. It's with your support that we're able to put this great content together for you guys. Make sure, of course, you're listening to Let's Pod It Out, Nando's fantastic Entourage Rewatch Pod, which is one of the funniest freaking podcasts you can listen to. We'll see you guys next week, man. Stay up. Remember, left is best. We're out of here.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.